My name is Catherine Wells, and today is March 27, 2004. This interview is being conducted in conjunction with the History Department of the University of North Carolina at Charlotte as part of the Voices of the New South series. This particular interview is taking place at the home of Reverend Barbara Crawford as part of the focus on the former Brooklyn neighborhood of Charlotte. Reverend Crawford, would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Reverend Barbara Davis Crawford, and I'm a Charlottean.
Okay. Ms. Crawford, did you grow up in Brooklyn?
Yes. I've lived in Brooklyn all my life, and it was a tremendous experience for me to be there at that time. And I remember living on First Street, Davidson Street, and I lived on First Street twice, and I loved it. And my experience on Davidson Street, where this house we stayed in, it was a little compact house where we go up under the house all the time and we play, and all my friends, we used to go up under the house and play school all the time. And some of my friends were the Blackmans. They stayed on 74, Highway 74. And they stayed right around the corner from Johnny Cafe. And in front of that house, Vermeer Eli lived across the street from that. And we always go up her house because my brother and Diamond, her brother, was good friends. And they always send me over to Vermeer house a lot. And so that's how I got to know Vermeer, because her father was the principal at Second Ward. And so I really cherish being there at that time because, I mean, it was an experiment. And they had a lot to do with who I am today. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite ladies were Rose Burt Jr. She stayed across the street. She's now deceased, but she lived on Boundary Street, not too far. And we go over there all the time. And my brother, my sister, we always, you know, be together a lot. And so Rosebud had a lot to do with my upcoming also, and steering me on what I need to do in life and how to treat people and what people expect out of you. And like I said, the Blackman, Ruby Blackman and her daughter, Henrietta Blackman. And my cousin married Henrietta Blackman. His name is Willie Davis. And all of us, you know, stayed right in the same area. And I had some close friend, Alton Ford, and it's just so many. It's just hard to say them. And
we'll pause for a second. Okay, you mentioned a house on Davidson Street. You want to talk about that first?
Yes, we lived in this little house on Davidson Street. It has about four or five rooms. And, you know, at that time we had outhouses. And therefore, and we had this little place where we go up under the house. The house was made so we can stand up under. We couldn't go out the yard, but it's still one of my fondest places because all the neighbors came to my house, and we went up under the house, and we play house and play school, and they loved it, and I loved it too because I couldn't go out the yard. And so we stayed there at least until I was about 12 years old, and then we moved up the street in the 700 block of Davidson Street. Across the street on First Street, Davidson and First, it was Pittman Grocery Store, so we stayed in front of Pittman Grocery Store, but before we stayed two blocks down. But my brother, he worked at Benjamin Davis, he worked at Pittman Grocery Store, and he was a meat cutter. And old Mr. Pittman, he always give us food and things like that, and we'd go in there and help him sweep the store, and every time my brother goes to work, he asks about me. So when he come home, I go by and he give me candy and stuff. And I love to go by there because he always give us something sweet. It was just me now, but I say we because sometimes I have some of my little friends with me. And I always have friends with me at that particular time because we couldn't be by ourselves. And my older, Benjamin was my oldest brother. And my sister Sarah, you know, she stayed home all the time, all work and did other things. So, but she was a joy in my life too. But when she had her first child, I named her Marilyn Davis. And well, I wanted to name her Marilyn Monroe, but they say Monroe couldn't be there, so she named her Marilyn Davis, which she still exists today. She's in my house now. And I took care of her. When I took care of her, that helped me being able to take care of children and wanted to be more around kids and gave me the inspiration to, when I grow up, I just like to be around children. And Marilyn, at that particular time, she was staying when she was about, well, she really wasn't born, but she had her. We had the house fire then, and Marilyn was in her stomach at that particular, no, Butterball, which is Marilyn, was in her stomach. Marilyn was the youngest, the old, okay, Marilyn was, I guess, about 4 years old, if I'm not mistaken, and we had a house fire, and this house fire, she was upstairs, and when the house caught a fire, I was burnt. I was downstairs, and I was burnt from my waist all the way up to my face. And I stayed in the hospital about a month or maybe to get my skin tone together. And I'm surprised that it didn't damage me. My skin came back, but it once in a while I have a little bit of flares up. But Marilyn fell off the roof when we were trying to get out. And my sister was carrying Marilyn Davis at that time, and she fell on her stomach. So therefore, he was kind of like deformed when he was born. But other than that, we lost everything at that time. But I was still in the house, and I was right by the stove. My brother, Benjamin Alfonso, used to carry paper, and they always lit the stove. We had socks and things hanging up so they can dry to go to school. That was Shaw Reserve that they worked for at that time. And then my bed was that middle room right behind this furnace, and so they couldn't get me out. And so as I was trying to get out, that's when I realized the house was on fire. So I finally managed myself to get out the back door. Mm-hmm. And when I opened the back door, that's when the back door fell in because the fireman was trying to get me out. And so after we moved from there, we was burned out right in front of the YMCA that was across the street. We moved on First Street. No, we moved to Cherry just for a few months to come back to Brooklyn. So that was just a few months to get us a house. And we stayed in Cherry for just a few months. And then we moved back on 616 First Street. And we stayed there until they start tearing down Brooklyn and finishing Second War. But Marilyn, myself, my brother Alfonso Davis, my brother Benjamin Davis, my stepfather Clyde Tate, and my mother Sarah Tate, all of us, you know, lived in that house. And so I went to Miles Street School during that particular time also, and I was in the sixth grade when the house caught a fire. And my teacher's name was Mr. Cunningham, Frank Cunningham, and he taught me a lot about trying to be compassionate, and that was the first teacher, one of the first teachers that I had a lot of experience with, it because during that time he felt like a father figure because he would come to see me. He would, not the children didn't laugh at me because he made me feel like I still was a part, even though I was kind of deformed and defigured at that particular time. But he was a jewel. To me, everybody's a jewel to me when they help me. And so during that time, we walked, Miles Street was right beside Second Ward. You can walk out of Second Ward gate into Miles Street. Second Ward was in between Miles Street and where we lived on First Street. And during that time, after I got up and started mingling and going around, they sent me to York Road. From York Road, I came back to Second Ward in the seventh grade. And in the seventh grade, that's when I was able to walk along to school until my mother decided that I couldn't walk to school. The teachers had to come and get me. And my brothers, they would walk me to school, and some of the teachers would come and get me, and I played basketball and all kinds of sports, and I was a drum majorette. We only had two girl drum majorette, which was Herman Ross and myself, Barbara Davis, at that particular time. I was drum majorette in 1961 up under Mr. Page. And some of my favorite teachers at that particular time, Second Ward, was Mrs. Flagg. She's also deceased now. She used to carry me over her house, and I used to clean up her house just to make lunch money and have some extra so I can buy materials, and she taught me how to sew. She was trying to encourage me to be whatever I want to be and be diversity. And I had Mr. Page. He would always take pain. He's the band director there, and he took interest in me, and I was a drum majorette plus a majorette at different times. And then talk about my art teacher, Miss Guess. She was the beautifulest art. I mean, she was art herself. And every time I go to the art room, she would take her time and show me different things, because my brother, Alfonso, and Benjamin, they love art, so they went into Archer Tech. And every day I see her, I said, "Have anything for me to do?" She said, "Come here, Little Davis." They all call me Little Davis because, "Come here, Little Davis." So Little Davis always go with them and do whatever they needed for me to do. And then Miss Mary Alford, she's still living today. She was my gym teacher, and I was in modern dance and cheerleading. Anything that they had at school, I was in. I think everybody got tired of me because all they know, they called me Dieter, D-E-D-E-R, and that's all I ever got my nickname. Nobody know me by my first name, by my real name. They say Dieter or Little Davis. Go get Little Davis. So they go get Little Davis, and we danced, and we had a lot of, I won the school, helped win the school a lot of trophies because I was I was one of the best. I'm not going to say I was the best. I would like to say that, but I know the next person say they are the best. So I was, through the grace of God, he gave me the ability to do some of the things that I wanted to do, and I feel comfortable to steer me in life with my schooling. And Mrs. Alford, I used to babysit her son, Ron Alford, and Greg Alford. And I mean, I wish teachers would be the same today like they did long time ago, because they took care of you. It wasn't a babysitting job. It was a nurturing job to help you get to where you want to be in life, to let you know that somebody cared. And I cannot forget Mr. Levi Brown. He was my chemistry teacher. And I know I'm not going to forget Robert Montgomery. He was one of the basketball coaches and football coaches at Second Ward. And he's still living today. He's kind of ill today right now, but he's still in good spirit. And I call him a lot and go see him. He's a member of my church, Greater Bethel AME Church. We're on Grandin Road now, but at that particular time, we was on Bavoy Street, and it was called Bethel AME Church. And that was not too far from the Charlotte Observer, and it was on the corner of Star and Bavoy Street. That's where we went to church. And getting back to school, before I get into my church situation, Miss Flagg, Mrs. Montgomery, And Miss Schofield, she was a member of my church also. She took pride in me, and she was my math teacher. But I wish I can call all of my teachers, because they was uplifting my life and they was dear to my heart. And Welcome Moulton, he is, mostly everybody's deceased, but I can just remember them as they were still here and telling me to go further. I can do it. Don't give up. They always tell me that, don't give up, you can do it. So, and they used to think I was quiet, but I'm not quiet. I just wait before I say anything, and then you can't shut me up. But I know sometimes they forget and say, well, Bob, will you just be quiet? I said, no, but anyway, I love the sing, and I didn't sing on the choir in school, but they thought I did because they could hear my voice when I was singing. And like I said, it was a cheerleader, drum major, the art club, the chemistry club, and it was most of the fun things that I was into. It was fun to me because I still was learning. And my principal was Durant at that particular time, and his son, I knew his son when in the ministry also. When I went into the ministry, he was there at my church. And Grisby, one of the principal, I remember him because of my brothers, and I used to walk down there with my brother to school all the time. But like I say, when I went to Second Ward, I stayed 3 or 4 houses up from Second Ward, and there was 4 apartments. And I stayed, at first I stayed in the back apartment, and then Mama wanted to move in a larger bedroom, so we moved to the next apartment, which was downstairs. And that's where all my teachers used to come to get me, carry me back and forth to school, and do special things for them. And when I have programs, Mama never did, you know, go to any of my function, but they were my mother and fathers of the school that took patient with me. And I really enjoyed it. And every time I do something, their names just come to me, and they're still a part in my heart right now. And across the street from the school was Greer's Funeral Home. And I always go in there. I love, I don't know why I have this thing about dead people. But I would go to the funeral home and go in there and look at the dead people and sit in there and pray a little bit and talk to, we had a man named Mr. Bob. He had Dorman Pinscher dogs at his home. And I always go down there and talk to him about it. And he showed me the funeral home. Many times I've been in the funeral home, it never got boring. And then when they have service, I get in the back of the little chapel and listen. I didn't know the people. I was just there. It was just something that, it just was just an urge that I felt like the Lord was just giving me a little spiritual uplifting and some of the things that he might wanted me to do at that particular time, because I wasn't sure why I loved going into the funeral home just to be around the dead people, be around the live people, and then I walk around and say something to them. I don't remember what I said, but I was there, and then when they walk out, I stood out there, and then Mr. Bob always come up to the house, Little Davis, you want to come down? I said, yes. So I walked down to the, you know, funeral home and stand out there and talk like I owned the funeral home. And then after that particular time, one of my friends' name was Valerie. She right now she's on school board. I think it's a school board she was running for. But I know it's the school board. It's one of them. I forgot. But she won. Her and her sister, and we played together going back and forth to school also. Then Juanita Franklin, I think she's still living now. We would be with her all the time because she stayed upstairs in the apartment. And Valerie, they stayed downstairs. and we would go to the movies and everything together. We would go to Davidson, 2nd Street, the Lincoln Theater. We would walk up there. And when we went to the Lincoln Theater, we always would pay 10 cents to get in. And that 10 cent could be to all day long. We didn't have to leave out because we didn't have anything to do but walk up the street and walk down the street and go to the drugstore and get my medicine and stuff like that. And then my aunt, which is Maggie Gill, she ran a grill. And to make some little extra money, I used to go in there and help her wash dishes. And you know about chitlins, and mm-hmm. help her clean chitlins. And she showed me how to cook chitlins and how to cook. And when it was time for some of the people to want stronger drinks, I couldn't serve stronger drinks, so I couldn't get around them. But serving food, and I love cooking, and that's one for her, you know. She had a little rooming house across the street, too, and I would help her straighten up the rooming house. And she just about raised me because she took a lot of pain in my life, and I would go up there after I got a little old and be with her so I can learn how to cook and get away from the house because I couldn't go anywhere. And my uncle was my favorite uncle, John Gill, which was her husband. He was the Iceman. And we called him Iceman John. And he always say, "Yes, ma'am." And then it was a certain way he say, letting people know that he was coming. He drove his truck with the doors off of him all the time. And everybody knew him, called him Iceman John, and then he would always carry me around with him on his little truck, and I get to see him take his ice and cold off the truck, and he would let me do it, but he would show me, and I just wave at everybody, and it was just my fondest days, and I enjoyed. And then, you know, going back and forth to church also. I had some friends on Boundary Street, which is the McCullough's and their husbands, and Miss McCullough married Mr. Patterson, Norma Patterson, and that was one of the daughters, both of her daughters. Right now I can think of her name, but I'll give it to you in a little bit. But Rebecca Patterson, you know, would carry me back and forth to church and take pain with me going back and forth to church. And they would come and get me. And then Miss Rosa Anna McMurray in our church, she was our Sunday school teacher. And she also would walk around to get me. And she stayed on Star Street, but everybody would just take a little pain in me. So I felt like I was just a special princess or queen or something, because they did took a lot of time, and I needed that nurturing. I got that nurturing from all of them. And so at church, we always go to the conferences, and when time to go to our AME conferences, I will go with the Sunday school and be a representative for the Sunday school. Be a secretary, or the choir would sing, and I love singing, so I would sing on the choir, and I was active in church. And Mr. Blackwell, Leroy Blackwell, he was one of the choir directors. He would come and pick all the children up from Brooklyn, and we would sing songs, and I thought I could sing then, but I know no one wanted to listen, but I sung anyway. And one of my favorite songs was "Lead Me, Guide Me Along God's Way," and I still love that today. And "His Eyes Is on the Sparrow," "Precious Lord." I still love those today because they are old songs that give you a lot of spiritual uplift when you sing them. And so,
were there any particular I don't want to say missions, but things that you did from the church, giving back to the community or involved with the community, special events which happened that you can remember that the church was involved in?
Yes, during that time, like the Sunday school in the regular church area, we would go into the neighborhood and invite people in, and we would carry them food and different little things, little goodie bags, and it was something like a mission to just go out and have people to come to the church, because you see a lot of boys and girls that were just playing during church hours and everything, and we encouraged them to come, and they would come, and some of them are still in the church today. And we would go up to Friendship Baptist Church to their vacation Bible school a lot, and then we would bring some of their members down our church, and we have vacation Bible school, and but the missions and things like that, it was everybody's thing. It didn't feel like a mission to at that particular time because everybody was involved in doing things for each other, and it's not like it is today. We shared everything we had during that time. Today, you have to go to different organizations not to even get any type of help. But we gave everything that we had at that particular time. And I know because I was one of the ones that they was given to. And I understand now what giving is all about and what love is all about and what the church means to me. Because it's one of God's gifts that we should come to Him and be fed. And when we go to in His vineyard and teach others about Him, He will always feed us in some way. And we never went hungry. We had bread, water. I mean, we never went home. We always had food. When we went to our different people's houses, they may look poor, but they had plenty of food. Mm-hmm. And they would invite us over, and we ate. And that was like a mission, too, because their mission was to feed the ministers and the church members. And back then, we could stay in people's houses when we have companies come to town, and they would stay in our houses and everything. We didn't know too much about motels at that particular time because we couldn't stay in a whole lot of motels because, most people had too many children. And you had to stay wherever the church family said, well, okay, I will keep 5 people. And they will open up their homes. Now the homes are not open up because of so much going on in the world today, so much evilness. But one day it will be back where we can all rejoice and do things together and just let Satan go on his way, just stomp him and let him go on his way. But God is good all the time. And so as long as you have God in your heart, you have respect for people, love for people, understanding, and the willpower to do the things that God would have you to do for people that are hurting in this life.
So would you say that the churches in general were really central to the community, that that was a bond in the community, or what?
It was a bond, and it gave us something to do and somewhere to be, and made us feel like we was wanted in the society at that time because we had so many hardships of places that we couldn't go. So it made us aware that we had somewhere to go, was the church, for our spiritual uplift, so we can go on and live as men, women, boys, and girls in society. And the church taught us much about life itself, mm-hmm. of how to deal, how to be with people, how to love, how to not to hate people. And the church was just a mission, not only just around that little area. We went a little further than our area. But at that particular time, you didn't have no stipulation of this church, that church. You just did whatever God wanted you to do.
So you would go into other communities besides Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Brooklyn was large. So we kind of like almost stayed in that community. But we went to other churches also when they had different functions.
If I ask you to kind of define the boundaries of Brooklyn or Second Ward, how would you describe that to me?
Okay. We started from where my church was, which was like Mohead, mm-hmm. and Gabor Street, all the way down to Friendship, a little further than Friendship Baptist Church, because they was on the corner of First Street. and all the way to, it's kind of hard to say now because they have torn up so much, but it was a little further than like downtown, about the beginning of downtown, down where the bus station, all of that was kind of like Brooklyn. All that was Brooklyn, all the way to Charlottetown Mall, where it was a little creek or something like that. And the highway, McDowell, because there was the House of Prayer, and we used to go down to the House of Prayer when they had special convocation and things like that. We would stand out and listen to the wonderful music and Daddy Grace, and just to get the spiritual upbeat of the music and the religious people, how they are getting together and serving the Lord there. And St. Paul Baptist Church, which that's St. Paul Baptist Church right here. And it was in Brooklyn at that particular time. I know Reverend Worth, and in front of St. Paul Baptist Church, it was Savoy Theater, with Savoy Theater there too. But we loved the one on the Lincoln Theater. I mean, even though Savoy was closer, but you know, we had to walk a little further. And the library was beside, on the back of the Savoy Theater, because, so not Savoy, Lincoln Theater. And Lincoln Theater was on 2nd Street. Well, let me go back. Okay, my aunt's grill was Maggie Grill, then on the corner of that on Caldwell Street was Lucille Grill. Then we go up a little further was the drugstore. Then we go up a little further, Bobby Shops, and then the Lincoln Theater. And then we go another building was the Public Library. And on the other side, it was a building there. I can't remember what building was there, but on the other side of that building across the street was Alexander Funeral Home. And we used to have a little fair in the back of his building all the time. There was a little field, and that was right in front of the Lincoln Theater. We always go up there, and they had a little carnival, and we had wonderful times swinging and the little musical things like they have today. But it was much fun then because we felt like a circus was coming to town, but it was just a carnival where we can have little games and things and play with. And
so the business community was really thriving.
Yes, it was. And Dennis was on 2nd Street. I'm trying to think of the Dennis name. I can't think of his
name.
Well,
were these mostly black-owned businesses?
Yes, there was black-owned business. Everything was black in the neighborhood of Brooklyn, except for Pittman Grocery, and that I know of. And Bessie Cooley, she went to my church. She had a grill also right in front of Pittman Grocery Store, which was the house that I stayed on in 700 block of Davidson Street. Her place was right there on the corner, and she belonged to my church also. But her home was in front of my aunt's cafe, which was on Caldwell Street. And she was a very exciting, unique lady in church and her business. And she gave the church a lot, and she gave me a lot. And that's about, that's all about, my pastors at that particular time was P.L. James, Wiley Williams, and there was another, Crawford came before we moved out of Brooklyn just to do the transaction in where the bishop sent a pastor there for a few months until another pastor come, and his name was Crawford. And the pastor that took a lot of pain in me, which his wife still lives today, and she's a member of our church, was Miss Adeline Williams. But her husband's deceased, and she has a lot of children that's well-educated and in politics. And you probably heard of Wiley Williams, which is her son now, that but he's out of town. He goes back and forth to Africa. But Mrs. Williams, Ally Williams, she was a school teacher also. But it was just so many teachers in my life that I was special to, and they're special to me, that led me to still be around children today. And that's why I'm in the school system today, 31 years. This is my retirement year. And I'm going to try to retire this year. If not, I will stay another year. And I work as an assistant, instructional assistant in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system. And I was teacher assistant of the whole area for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system. And they sent me district, and I was the runner-up for the district of the teacher assistant of the year for the NCATA. And I'm still proud of the outcome of everybody that has made me what I am today in the ministry also. And I know I'm jumping, but let me go back.
Well, then let me ask you this. When you're talking about schools, mm-hmm. We'll go back a little bit. I've heard some people say there were some rivalries, some friendly rivalries.
Oh, yes.
Tell me about those.
Oh, yes. West Charlotte. I hate to say it like that, but West Charlotte is one of our famous schools that we love so dearly. Every time we would go to the, we have a game together, and we play them, and we would go to the Park Center and Memorial Stadium. I say Park Center because it's still there. And Memorial Stadium, and every time we have a game together, a riot would always come up. And, you know, they're in our territory, but I'm not putting it all on them. But some kind of way that the rivalry would start, and sometimes we beat them, and sometimes they beat us in the games. But still, you just have a few people that love to just keep something going all the time to keep excitement. But we call it excitement during that time. And then when we go on their court, which was where Charlotte, the same thing happened. And today it's still happening today, and I don't know why, but nobody's mad with one another, but it's just that those two schools are just like trying to compete with one another, and they competed with one another. And one of my other good experiences was, I never will forget, when I was a drum major rep. This particular day on Thanksgiving at the parade in 1961, I was a drum majorette, and it was raining, I mean raining. I had to walk from Freedom Park, march from Freedom Park all the way to the square to do my little camel walk. And I take the show, doing my little camel walk. Then here come West Charlotte getting off the bus. They didn't walk in the rain, and they stole the show from up under me.
Oh, no.
And so I was kind of upset, but I said, you know, at least I had the show first. But they won, but it wasn't the right way, because, see, they rode the bus and then got off the bus and finished marching. And so, which they wasn't tired, but I was tired. But I still enjoyed leading the band, Second War Band, and with my little suit on, cream color suit, my little high hat, and just strutting with my baton up and down, and everybody yelling, Dita, Dita, Little Davis, Little Davis. And I really enjoyed it. And even though my suit was so wet, I couldn't lift my legs up. But they got up in the air some kind of way.
Well, it sounds like your memories of Brooklyn are really good. I have to ask this question, too. Mm-hmm. I understand that Brooklyn had a diverse community as far as economics were concerned. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a little bit about maybe the wealthier side and the side that was not so wealthy and how that played out together?
Okay, we had a lot of people that owned homes in the community, and we had people that did not own homes. So to us, it didn't look like we were deprived of anything, because everyone knew each other. And then when Urban Renewal came in, because they felt, felt like they needed a change, we needed a change. But when they came in to make that change, they took away everything that we had and we lived for, because they say that they was going to rebuild and put the school back. They did not give us another school called Second Ward. They promised to do that, but they did not do that. And today, we are still fighting for our school, which the gym still exists today. And we're trying to get the gym so we can have our artifacts and everything put in the gym, like we have our house, our Second Ward house, and we still trying to get that situated so we can keep that house, keep the gym, because that's the original gym of the first building that they built, sturdy building, because it was many, they had about two or three other buildings before then, but this is the main building. But
do you feel that the residents of Brooklyn were given a voice in the city's decision?
They say they gave us a voice, but I don't remember, because at that particular time when I left and went out of town to travel with my husband, Donald Crawford, my niece called me and said they was going to close Second Ward down. And I was overseas at the time, so I could not get back to share what I felt about the community and the schools and things like that being torn down, because it was very hurtful to me that all my historical factor have gone down to drain, just demolished. And so
you said you were overseas. Was it missions or was his work?
I was traveling with my husband. He was in Canal Zone, Panama Canal Zone, Fort.
So when did you come back?
When I came back, they demolished a lot of. They demolished a lot of things before I left. Married, I went to A&T, then I got married. And then I started traveling with my husband.
So they demolished things before you left too.
They demolished the housing area. Started demolishing some of that because we had to move out.
Tell me about that.
Okay, the apartments. When they wanted to demolish that, they gave us so much time to get out. Excuse me. So I rented this little house on Lincoln Heights Court, so my mother them could have somewhere to stay because they was building new homes over there. And so when they moved out of the home, that was all I could hear that they was tearing down. But at that particular time, I was going to A&T. So therefore, back and forth, and then every time I come home and go over there, they have torn down something else. And it was just heart-crushing, because when you come and see your historical factor just gone, just like that, and I couldn't even keep a brick for my school because I wasn't here. A lot of people gather bricks for memories. And I wish I could have gotten one of those bricks, because I'm a person that saved kind of like everything. And then when I heard about the school, I was overseas. I'm not overseas, Panama, the Canal Zone. And my niece, which she had to be transferred, Marilyn Davis had to be transferred to go to Hawkins. But she still says she's a part of Second Ward, which is still a part of Second Ward, because everybody that went to Second Ward had to go to other surrounding schools. And it was a sad time during that time, even though I was across the water, it was a sad time, you know, for me. And it was just devastating to see everything torn down and nothing put up to remind you of your heritage. And
well, how did the city handle the compensation?
Well, by being young, I'm not very sure in that particular area, but to me, the parents still had a hard time trying to live up to where they were staying because of the income, because my mother, she was a maid during that time, and I would try to, you know, help her when I was in service with my husband. I mean, I didn't serve, but you might as well say they called me captain. Oh, they called me Captain because, you know, when your husband's in service, you're in service too. So the guys looked up to me. But anyway, when my mother, you know, staying in the houses and things like that and had to move, it was hard for her. And to finish sending us to school and things like that, because I was the only one in school at that, in college at that particular time, so it was very difficult for her to send me to college, and everything has been just taken from under her. And because sometimes she would say, I wish I still stayed in Brooklyn. And I couldn't respond but so much, because if I did, I would start crying, because I said everything is gone. But I know everything has to be demolished and built over because it's old. But something should remain to remind you of your historical factor. And see, like my church, when we moved from Brooklyn, we moved on Trade Street in Gillespie's church. We shared church with them until we can establish another church. And then we stayed there, I don't know how many years, because I was back and forth.
Did the congregation hold together?
No, because people would, see, then you can walk to church. It was a very few people that stayed away from the church that had cars can come to church, but the neighborhood kind of like stayed around and went to the churches that was there. And then Reverend Rich, Mel Rich, he was our pastor at that particular time. He started this church, which is Greater Bethel. It was Bethel, and he changed the name to Greater Bethel. And that's where we are now, on Grandin Road, 201 Grandin Road. And he was the founder of this particular church. But the founder of our church itself is Richard Allen. And because long time ago he was worshiping in a Methodist church, and him and Absalom John went into prayer, because we had to sit in the balcony at this white church in Philadelphia. And so this is where our church originated from. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't want us to pray after Richard Allen and Absalom Jones and a few others was praying. The ushers came down, we call them Saxon, then came down and told them to get up, that they could not pray there because we had to sit in the balcony. The whites could pray, but we couldn't pray. We had to do everything we had to do from the balcony. So Absalom Jones, Richard Allen, they got up and said, I will not trouble you anymore. So during that time, they formulate AME Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church, only for the colored people at that particular time. So we grew from that. Then we start getting different churches in different areas. And that's how the bishop at that particular time had churches in Charlotte and everywhere. And this is where our church originated from Richard Allen and his wife, Sarah Allen. And
well, I know you've been very active in trying to preserve the gymnasium,
yes,
the second ward. What lessons do you think politicians should take from the experience in urban renewal in Brooklyn?
I feel like when it's a historical event or historical people that cherish something, I think politics should come together and work towards on renewing that particular heritified place, so the community and their children and their children can look back and say, my grandparents' mother, and then go on down and say, oh, I had a part in seeing what became of this building. And that building, it means a lot to a small person like me. I'm 60 years old now. And during the time, I was 17. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that Second Ward was going to be destroyed, like I said, it hurt me. I know they destroy other buildings and things like that,
But to the people, it means a lot. And I know Irwin Newell should come in and fix things up, but some things should remain. And the politics should try to keep and preserve some things that is historical. Mm-hmm. And Second Ward is a historical first school in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm.
Well, given all that you know now and looking back, what are some positives and some negatives that came out of the whole urban renewal?
Well, the positive things came out is that we had to go somewhere else, start a new life. But that new life still had complications in it. And what's the other word?
The negatives.
The negative was that when you look back, you didn't have anything to come back to. Mm-hmm. And that was the negative. When you have something to come back to, you feel more gifted. You feel like I can come back and see where I come from. Say, look where I came from. But I can't find that. I can't go back and say, this is where I came from. Even though they say they're going to keep, not they, but even though the politics and the urban renewal say they're going to keep some of the streets like Second Street, Second Ward, and still name it Brooklyn, they tried to change the name of Brooklyn. We fought for that when they was doing this urban renewal for 2010. So they're going to keep a few streets. They're going to keep the gym. They're going to keep, Altamont wasn't there because there was nothing there at that particular time. This is the newer stuff they built since they tore down Second Ward. But Second Ward is the only thing that I can remember that is there. Because right now the educational building is in front of Second Ward School. And every time someone asks me, where do you live? I said, do you know where the educational building? The Charlotte Mecklenburg School building where you go apply for jobs and things, or all the schools and where the, you know, and I said, the building right in front of Second Ward, I mean right in front of the educational building was Second Ward. I said, when they start building the new part of Second Ward, they left half of that up. They tore the old part down. Then they left the gym and part of the other, but they have went in there and renewed it because it's called Metro School now. And I wish that they would at least change Metro School back to Second Ward. I know that might be upsetting to some other people that when the name changed, but they changed schools and everything anyway. But this is my heritage. Mm-hmm. And my heritage, I want to live on where boys and girls that might have known me, all their parents, all their grandkids might say, well, this is the first school. And but I just want them to just to keep the history, not only the black history, but just keep the history of old people, of young people, of the generation, so they would know.